Hello, welcome to Priest Alive. 38, right? Yeah, I
think. Yeah, 38 already.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I've got it here. I blanked there for a second. yeah, so I'm Matt Stoltz, and I am joined by Mikola Sousa.
Hi!
Joe, sadly, will not be joining us today, but for very good reasons. It's his birthday, so our bouncing baby boy.
Happy birthday, Joe!
Yes, happy birthday, Joe. It's been fun. I encouraged people to send pictures of themselves with Joe from different events over Twitter, and it's been fun seeing people all over the world hanging out with Joe in the past. So I'm sure he's enjoying that on his birthday.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a great show this time. I'm super excited that my buddy Andrew Mountcastle is going to be joining us. He's a professor at Bates College here in Maine and does some really cool stuff with our machines for his biology classes.
I'm really looking forward to find out what he does, because it sounds really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's neat stuff. I'm a little remiss that it's taken me this long to be like, oh, book him. So anyways, so let's get down with it with our Prusaprinters picks of the week. What do you have, Mickey?
I'm putting myself down. Apparently I'm too loud. Let me know if it's any better. I do have a print that won one of the flash contests, one for the cables. And yeah, it's the cable strap printed, cable strap print in place. By Extrude Team, and yeah, it's really fun. You print this red clamp, then you print this strip, and I've done a color change so that you can see what's going on. It's flat. By the way, this is PETG, but it's so thin, it's so flexible. Yeah, and then basically you just slide it in, and then this other end goes through the clamp, and once you click it, it locks in place, it, you know, catches on one of these CLO lines, and it can go back. It's really quite impressive that this is print in place, and it works as well as it does. So
yeah, we had a lot of kind of like the reusable zip tie kind of entries for that flash contest, and I just was really impressed at how well that one functioned. And, you know, plenty of print in place things can be a little difficult. That one, I think, just prints really easy and really well.
Oh, we have Extrude Team in the chat. And hey, yeah, he's right. I need to upload it as make. I kind of didn't get to it. So, yeah, you know, I tell everyone to upload makes, and then I don't do it myself. So I will do that.
Yeah, I don't think I've uploaded a make yet. I'm definitely guilty of that, especially when I'm printing a lot of the contest prizes. And
I'm quite close to the batch of 50 makes, so I do want to do that.
Nice.
So what's our print make, Matt?
I have one from a flash contest too.
Oh, nice!
Nice. So I have the music staff pen. So this holds a series of pen inks in it. If you can see in there, I don't have the ink in it right now. But the whole idea is you can draw the bar staff across. You know, just take a, if you want it nice and flat, just take a ruler, hold it, and just drag it across, and make the music bars to write in your notes and things like that. And I thought, you know, it's such a purpose built piece of hardware, and it's one of those things that, like, the market probably wouldn't be big enough that this would ever, like, become a real product. But I guarantee that if you have anyone who's, like, a real musician, like, writing music and things like that in your life, or, like, your kids are part of marching band, you know, that their instructor would love one of these. That, you know, someone who's really into music would totally love one of these. And it's a quick and easy print, you know, 50 cents or so worth of material, like, just nothing. So print some of these out. That is nice. By a user that I am absolutely gonna butcher their name. Pawakatsi, I think.
Pawakatsi, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. So definitely a fun one.
Okay, awesome. We kinda already transitioned into the first topic, I guess.
Yeah, flash contests.
With our picks, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys have just been absolutely blowing us away with the flash contests. You know, when I first proposed the idea of doing it, you know, we wanted to see how things would go, and we've been really, really shocked at how much of success has been for you guys. So we really, really appreciate you guys doing everything to you know, help that make that such a thing. So currently we have bottle openers running right now, and that ends in 4 days. That'll end on Sunday. And the next theme will launch this coming Friday. So,
We are announcing the winners. You know, every Friday we do the new contest, and at the same time we announce the contest of the previous one. So,
yeah, we were a little behind on the first Mickey.
Yeah,
you've
I'm here.
You've got a machine in the waiting room. Are we still streaming?
Yeah, we are. That's the screen sharing PC. I rebooted it once, so I'm trying to join again.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's fine on my end.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure that YouTube was still seeing us.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. So we were a little behind on the announcement on the first contest, but that's because the buttons contest, you guys just
so
absolutely
many
blew us away. Yeah. Blew us away, and like trying to decide what was the best entry with 600 plus buttons was. You know, taking its time. So, but yeah, now contests end on Sunday, and we're pushing the winners out the following Friday. So we will have the contest winners for the rings contest coming up this Friday, which had some neat rings in it. I'm super happy with that. Do I need to admit? Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Super excited to see, you know, where that's going. But yeah, transportation contest is also still going, and that is one of our long form contests. You know, over a month long, and yeah, it's getting a great response too. Super happy with some of the entries there, and that ends in 11 days, and then we'll be announcing our next big contest.
Yeah. So we are still totally running the big contests. Like,
yeah,
there is a balance between. You know, big contests that where people can submit really nice things, and the quick flash contests where, you know, we can just cycle topics, and it's a fun thing where you can just, you know, jump into your favorite modeling program and do something in maybe 20 minutes, print it and upload that.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of feedback from people that they really enjoy the kind of like low stress of the flash contest.
Yeah.
Like it is just something small and easy that they can push out. So
also, I really like seeing, I see submissions where I'm sure people are, like, you know, just trying modeling for the very first time, and it seems like the flash contest is the reason to do it, and I really appreciate that, because I think it's quite addicting once you get into the rabbit hole of making your own models for your 3D printer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, with all of that, Prusa Printers has hit a major milestone.
Yes.
This happened. Was it earlier this week or late last week? I think it was earlier this week. 100,000 prints uploaded. 100,000 models uploaded to Prusa Printers.
It's 103, so, like 102 and 600 already. It's really growing.
Right.
Like rapidly right now, and that is amazing. So
yeah, the growth is, you know, it took a couple years to kind of really catch on, but the growth is really accelerating, and again, that's all thanks to you guys. You know, we really appreciate you guys putting your faith in us to put your models out there, and you know, choosing Prusa Printers as a place to house your things. You know, I think some of the things that we've had going on recently have definitely helped push that push. Again, flash contests, you know, have a non-insignificant amount of those contributions in there. But, you know, the introduction of the badges and the Prusa meters definitely, you know, was something that you guys caught on to and have really embraced. So
we are absolutely committed to keep developing it. So definitely more and more things coming in the future. One I can show right now that's been just added. It's not even, I think, translated yet. Yeah, the little label is wrong. But yeah, image rotations. It's this little thing, you know, but now with one click, you can so easily rotate your images. So we are reading the image rotation from the EXIF of the image. So it should be, if it's correct in your phone gallery or whatever, it should be correct. But if it's not, you can just click the button and very easily rotate it. So quality of life thing that I think, you know, saves you so much time of having to open it on your PC, rotate it, save it, upload it again.
Yeah.
A hassle. This will be so much easier.
Yeah, and so often, like, you don't realize it, but, like, you know, you picked up your phone and you held your phone at just the wrong angle, and it, you know, it did rotate your phone, and you took a picture and didn't realize it.
Yeah.
And then you go to upload it, and you're like, oh, now I need to fix it,
yeah.
Things like that.
Especially,
you know,
if you're taking the picture, like,
right
down, and then it very often just messes up the rotation completely.
Exactly. And so, you know, being able to not have to worry about doing that elsewhere and just being able to click that button. I think that's a great, you know, added little feature that, you know, isn't going to be a day-to-day feature for everyone, but when it happens, it's just gonna be nice.
We did talk about the name change in some of the previous streams, and I think it's good time to bring that back up again. So you guys who are watching us, I would say the, like, you know, guys who know the most about the stuff we do, we are still going to, you know, forward with that, and it's actually coming, like, quite, it's gonna be happen quite soon. So it's very possible that between this and the next stream, the name change will happen, which,
yeah,
I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, me too. Totally hoping that timing works out, and so,
yeah. We're not ready to reveal yet. We want it to be, you know.
I know. I just want to say it. Want to say it, but
yeah,
not yet. So maybe we should. No, I don't know. Part of me says let's just. But no, part of me just says, like, let's just save it for, like, the next stream and, like,
maybe
hit the button.
We'll
and
see. Yeah.
Yeah. If we're close, I think we should, because, I mean, that's.
Yeah, we're doing more than just redirecting, you know, a domain name.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a split, or, you know, putting some things on that makes sense on prusafree.com, and then you know, splitting the rest of the stuff to the new domain name. So that's, you know, and making it more stable. We're also working on performance, because we expect that, you know, we might have quite a rush of traffic once we do this, and we really want to stress test it now before that happens. So, you know, it doesn't get slow or crash when that happens.
Yeah, everyone is confused and thinks that Prusa Printers is only for Prusa Printers. Should no longer have that confusion after the new name change.
I'm seeing, like, quite a few, you know, in the chat talks about application. I know it's not the same, but the web, you know, it's very responsive the way it's written. I actually use it on my phone all the time. But we are talking about how we could get this into, like, App Store and Google Play Market. So definitely something we do realize you guys are talking about it, and it's something that you would like to have. So it's not, like, it's not being worked on right now, but we might give this priority in the future.
You know what I would love is just, you know, even if it wasn't the full blown thing, some easy way to, like, upload images from your phone straight to, like, your account, and then you could go in and just, like, pull your images over for your things, because that's the only part that annoys me about, because my STLs and my models are normally on my laptop, right? But I've got to get my images back.
Oh, right, like when you're uploading a print, right? When I upload a make, I do it from my phone, like, I don't,
right?
Yeah, I just do it from the phone. But
yes, a make. No problem. But you know, when you're doing the initial upload, it'd be nice if there was, like, you had a gallery of images or something that you could pull your images from, and that
yeah
I don't know, just brainstorming. You guys tell us what something like that what you think, what are your pain points about uploading things to Prusa Printers. Tell us at the end, and we'll discuss it. Oh, Mickey with his sly little show off there. So, yeah, that actually is a very good point. That's kind of a snazzy t-shirt you're wearing there, Mickey.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the print shop, they, you know, screwed up, and it's all upside down. No, it's not. This is the way it's supposed to be. So this is our new Prusa Slicer keyboard shortcuts design. And the way it works is it's not upside down. It's exactly the right way so that when you're sitting in front of your computer, you can just do this. And you're like, oh, how do I do box selection? Oh, how do I do partial arrange, you know, arrangement of just the selected models on the build plate? Oh, how do I cut the model with a single shortcut? And you can just pull up your shirt and look at it. I think it's hilarious. I love it.
Yes. You know, so yes, we've been talking about new merch coming. So that's one piece. We've got a couple pieces of new merch to show you. Yeah. And the second piece is also a Prusa Slicer shortcuts, but in mug form.
Yeah, this it's matte black. Oh, I love the matte black. Yeah. It's very nice. This is
one of those nice like metal mugs, which, you know, get a little hot when you're drinking hot liquids out of them.
Yeah.
But you don't have to worry about breaking them quite as badly. Like they're far more resilient than, say, a ceramic.
We sampled surprising amount of them before we found one that's really nice. And you know the print is quite fine, so we really needed to find a method that would work really well. But yeah, it's very nice. So both of these are not on the eShop yet, and you can't exchange your Prusa meters for them yet. But we have these are the final designs, and they are on the way. So as soon as we get them, in a maybe like I would hope under a month or so, we will be adding them to the eShop. And
yeah.
I suspect we will also add them to Prusa printers so you can exchange your Prusa meters for them.
Yeah, and these aren't the only ones. There's more shirts and more designs on the way too.
Yes.
We just don't have the samples in for them yet to be able to show you guys.
One t-shirt is like really close to being finished, but the final sample is on its way.
It's my favorite one that I've seen thus far.
Is it? Okay, nice.
Yeah.
I do quite really like it too, but this one, I think this one is so, I can't wait to give these to the Prusa Slicer team.
Nice. Very nice. All right. We have one more bit of announcement. Some of you guys may have caught it, some of you may not. And I think this is actually a really great announcement also to have on the call that we have Andrew on the call too, which is kind of perfect. Which is, we now have a U.S. distributor. A lot of you have been asking for a long time, is there someone in the U.S. that you can buy Prusa machines from, different Prusa equipment, and we've now made that happen. Printed Solid, who many of you have known through the years, is now an official reseller for Prusa products here in the U.S. That is really a big deal for educators and government institutions and places that have like crazy complicated purchasing requirements. Some of you guys may not know it, but a lot of schools are not allowed to purchase equipment from companies that aren't based here in the U.S. A lot of kids haven't had access to what I will say confidently is the best desktop 3D printer on the market, because they weren't able to buy them from a U.S. distributor. Now, that is not the case. So Printed Solid will be selling Prusa printers. Right now, it is kind of exclusively for educators and like I say, government institutions and things like that. Hopefully in the future that will open up to a little bit wider of an audience. Right now it doesn't really make sense. Like you guys are going to get a better deal ordering directly from us because, you know, there has to be some concessions in getting everything over Printed Solid and, you know, the shipments and the costs and everything else. It's opening that market for educators, which I think is great.
Yeah, I'm sure that the cooperation with Printed Solid will grow in the future.
Yeah.
So that it opens to not just education, government, and enterprise.
Yeah. But it's a start.
Yeah, I think it's definitely step in the right direction for us.
Yeah. So
people have been asking for it since forever, so it's nice to be moving there.
Yeah, so if you're a teacher out there and you're interested, you know, definitely get in touch with Printed Solid and let them know, and they can, you know, work up a price quote for you and hook you up, which is great.
Yeah, and you will get all the support and everything you can expect from us. Like, you will still get that.
Yeah, no compromise there, which is nice. I mean, this is why I tell people all the time. I see people out on the internet, like, asking people questions about, you know, how to fix their machine or, you know, things like that. And I'm like, have you gotten in touch with support? You know, you bought a Prusa, like, take advantage of the amazing support that you know, our team offers. And, you know, I think a lot of people just aren't used to that level of support from different companies. And so, it's definitely a big deal.
Okay, that's all the news for now.
Yeah, I think so.
And
we're a couple minutes ahead of schedule, but that's okay. That gives us more time with Andrew. Let's bring in Andrew Mountcastle. Andrew is an assistant professor at Bates College here in Maine. There he is,
Andrew.
Hey, folks.
So, assistant professor of biology, to be exact, at Bates College. And he is doing some really fun applications of kind of mimicking, shall I say, biological structures with 3D printing. I first met Andrew because of all the fun COVID mask printing stuff, and we were printing out masks for hospitals and first responders here in Maine. We have started talking about all the other fun stuff that he does, and I thought I would bring him in. So thanks for joining us. I've kind of discussed a little bit about what you teach, but if you can go into kind of like better detail of like what kind of professor are you actually?
Sure. Yeah. So my research is focused on biomechanics, which is an integration of physics and sometimes engineering with biology. I actually did my undergrad in physics and then did my PhD in a biology program. And so a lot of my research and also my teaching by extension is focused on issues related to, you know, combining questions of physics with biological questions. And I use 3D printing in kind of a variety of ways. I mean, I use it for just sort of lab-based brackets and custom things that connects, you know, this weird shaped thing to this other weird shaped thing, places where I would used to use duct tape. But now that I have a 3D printer, I mostly use that. And then I also use it for, like, you know, classroom demonstration purposes, and also directly in my research.
Yeah. So we should probably jump right into the fun one that we used for the thumbnail.
Yeah, really curious about that.
I'm sure everyone's just kind of itching to find out more about, which is you have made upscaled versions of cat tongues.
Yeah. Scaled up versions of cat tongues. Yeah, that's right. I've got one right here, actually. So for those of you who own a cat, certainly know this. If you've spent any time around a cat, you probably have some sense of this. So cat tongues have these, I don't know if you guys can see that, they have these rigid spines that are sort of projected backwards on the tongue. This is obviously way scaled up. They're typically, you know, very small, but you can feel anytime a cat licks you or your hand or anything, you can feel these things. And they're officially called papillae. And so one of my colleagues down at Georgia Tech a few years ago was interested in this, and they did a study that showed that cat tongue, they did some theoretical work as well as some modeling work to show that cat tongues, the shape of these papillae are such that it actually reduces the forces required to groom hair. And that was sort of the first study that explored this. And so we became interested in this, and primarily from a teaching standpoint. I teach an upper level biology course called Bioinspiration, which is all about trying to look to biological designs to help inspire the design of engineering devices, basically. It's kind of a growing field. Yeah.
I watched an interesting YouTube video about like designing bullet trains based on like the noses of birds.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's a classic example. Yep. Velcro is another classic example. Velcro are based on the little spines on burrs.
And I mean, gyroid infill is kind of like bone marrow, right? A little bit.
I have heard about that. Yeah, I'm less familiar with that, but I have heard that. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a super fun, cool area of research. And so we, with my students, what we wanted to explore was how do sort of changes in the morphological design of these spines, like what happens if you give more spacing between them or change the angle or change the curvature or change the size. Mm-hmm. You can make all these simple controlled changes. And this is the beauty of 3D printing for designing these things is you can, you know, with the press of a few buttons, you can keep everything else the same and only change one morphological feature, which allows us to explore the role of like a specific thing, a specific morphological feature of a cat tongue and its role in reducing force. What I have my students do is sort of just take, you know, change different parameters of the morphological design, and then we drag them through some fake fur that I got from Hobby Lobby. And we try to sort of mat the fur up and then pull this through, and we attach this to a force sensor, and you can measure the force required to pull it through the hair. And it's a super fun, relatively simple project that we do. You know, my Bates College is all undergrads. I don't have any grad students or postdocs. And I, in a number of my courses, actually, part of the course is teaching them how to design and use a 3D print, design objects in like Fusion 360 or SketchUp. And then we print it on my lab computers. And this is one of those examples. So it's not a super sophisticated design, but it's simple enough that we can do in a semester and actually get some fun data from.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I would normally ask this later, but I think in the discussion of, you know, kind of tweaking these models, what do you primarily use for designing these? Is it Fusion 360?
Yeah, I've used both SketchUp and Fusion 360, and I've primarily shifted over to Fusion 360 now.
I think a lot of us were SketchUp back in the day because it was accessible, and now Fusion and things like Fusion and Onshape and things like that have kind of like push SketchUp back down to the old days.
Yeah, exactly. I also have used SolidWorks in the past. I've migrated primarily to Fusion 360 just because I'd like to give my students free software that they can carry with them after they leave.
Yeah, I bet the students are super engaged doing this, right? Because like oversized cat tanks, like dragging them on rugs, like sign me up. I really want to do this.
Yeah, it's a fun one. And I'm actually teaching this course again next fall. And I think the direction we're planning to go in is cats are not the only animals that have these papillae. Cows also have them. But what's interesting is the morphology of the cow tongue papillae are somewhat different than cat tongue papillae. And it's interesting to think about what the functional role of the functional consequences of those morphological differences might be, given like the difference in cow fur from cat fur, for example.
What do you think, Mickey? Should we like audit this via Zoom next fall?
Yeah, I kind of really. I have so many questions. Like, what about big cats? What about lions? You know, and the whole thing is scaled up, but you know, fur, the individual strands are probably the same thickness, so. Questions.
Do the papillae change size in various cats?
That's a great question. I can't remember off the top of my head. The study actually looked at that, though. They actually went to the zoo and got some samples from large cats and small cats. And this is actually, as you can imagine, a super oversimplification of how this works. Right. One of the things that we can't mimic is the sort of cup shape, the scooped shape of these papillae help pull up saliva actually from the tongue. And so they serve as sort of a hydrating function as well. Mm-hmm. So they can distribute, it helps sort of groom the fur to provide a little bit of saliva in there as well.
I read or saw something one time that also talked about that they had the function of helping remove meat from
that,
bone.
I've heard that too,
Interesting. Yeah,
it's almost like a rasping action, and so I don't know if that's
That could be, and I don't think that's actually been. Maybe we should get some chicken drumsticks in the lab or something.
Next up on Andrew's class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Roadkill. We'll bring some roadkill in and pull these things from roadkill. There's a speculation that the papillae on cow tongues is one of the important functional roles it plays, not only in grooming, but also in actually sort of pulling hay. You know, grass and things.
Yes.
So there may very well be different functional requirements for papillae to do that versus groom longer hair, you know?
Right. Very interesting. So what other devices have
cool
you created?
Cool stuff do we do? Yeah. So I'll tell you about another fun project that I do. So this is an intro biology class that I teach. And I am not an expert in this, but I've learned a lot more about it since I started asking this question. So, many of you have probably seen something like this. This is actually a sponge. And the form many of you have probably seen is this form, which is actually the skeleton of a sponge. And so people use these for like loofahs and things. This is like the consumer product that comes from a particular species of sponge. But sponges come in a huge diversity of sizes and shapes and materials,
but they were these sponges before we like
the OG sponges. Right? They're the most primitive animals on our planet, and they are animals, which is crazy. So, but if this thing were live, so again, this is just a skeleton, the skeletal remains of a sponge. If this one were live, what you would see is a very thin membrane that encases the whole thing that actually acts as a body barrier, right? So. And in this membrane that stretches across this, there are tiny, tiny holes that are sort of distributed all the way around it. And then there's one or more larger holes at the very top. And the way the sponge makes a living is they actively pump water with these little cilia. They pump them into the tiny holes around the side of the sponge and out of the larger diameter hole or multiple holes at the top. So the ostia are the little holes around the perimeter, and then the osculum is the big one at the top, right? And so most sponges, I mean, they pump, they actively pump and they filter. The reason they do this is they filter food particles out of the water, and they also get oxygen, dissolved oxygen from the water. So this is how they make a living. But a really cool thing happens when you take something that has the basic morphology of a sponge and you put it in current, and I'll show you that. So can I share my screen here?
Yes.
Nicholas? Yeah, sure. Go
all right?
ahead.
All right, cool. All right. Awesome. So this is a water flume, recirculating water flume that we built for this class that I teach. It's pretty simple. It's got a little pump down here. Hopefully you guys can see my cursor.
Yeah.
And it just recirculates. It's an aquarium pump, and it recirculates water. It dumps it up on this end of the tank, and it just flows down here and then gets pulled out this way. You need a really long flume in order to dissipate all the turbulence out of the water from the upstream end. So by the time the water reaches sort of this end of the tank, it's nice and smooth. It's what we call laminar flow, and it's all moving together at the same velocity. And so I'll show you what happens when we put one of, let me stop sharing for a second and show you the sponge we actually make. So very simple 3D printed sponge. So it's got the holes on the side, the ostia, and then it's got a single hole at the top, the osculum. And when you put this, I'll go back to sharing here. When you put this in a current, what you get is, let me get this one up. Oops. So this is that sponge I just showed you in current, and I'm inserting some dye at the upstream end of it. It's being carried down by the current. And what you'll see is it eventually makes its way into the ostia and out the central opening at the top, the osculum. And recognize this is obviously not a living animal. It's not pumping at all. This is just passive flow that's moving through the sponge. And so biologists are really interested in understanding to what extent, if any, the sponge might be able to take advantage of passive flow to help reduce the energetic demands of actively pumping all its water. So it's like if they can get a little bit of a free ride, mm-hmm. a little bit of a, you know, free water flow, it reduces the energetic cost of actually pumping water, which is really significant component of their metabolic costs. And so the way we actually test this is we make these sponges that have, so this is a sort of a modified version of it. The 3D printed part is down here. It's, you can see, you might be able to see some holes mm-hmm. in the side there. And yeah. then we print it. So at the opening at the top with a certain diameter within which I can slot in a clear glass pipette. Then I just cut a piece of pipette and pop it at the top. And then we illuminate, this is a standard practice in fluid flow visualization called PIV. And we use a laser sheet to illuminate, we sort of send that laser sheet right down the middle of this pipette. We put this in the flume. And what you can do, hopefully you can see this, is those tiny little illuminated particles going are actually up. Moving up that clear pipette. And so now we have a way that we can put a camera on this and track those particles to calculate the velocity of water flow through the sponges. And then we can do really fun things like change different sort of morphological design. So you can change the shape of the oscula. This is sort of make it a little bit wider. Mm-hmm. You can change the angle. You can change the number of holes in any way you want. So lots of fun sort of experimental questions that we can ask about, well, how does sponge morphology affect the induced flow rate through the sponge when you put these things in current?
That is awesome. I love the visualization. That looked really great.
Right.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a fun one.
Yeah, and this is the experiment that kind of first got me like looking at the actual work that you were doing, because you got in touch with me and said, "Hey, my printer's down, and right. I've got a lab coming."
The benefits of having Matt live right down the road is he has a
you are doing sort of
entire factory of 3D printers in his basement. And I can just roll up and say, "Hey, Matt, I need a favor, buddy."
Well, evolution is like doing randomly. You are doing in, you know, one class after another, right? Like, let's change, make this bigger, smaller, longer, and right. like watching what happens, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially, that is what we're doing, and we're just looking at different systems doing the same approach. Yeah. I'll show you one more thing if we have time.
Oh, yeah, sure. I definitely saw one more thing that's not related to this.
Yeah, so. So this is a 3D printed, based on 3D printed parts, that is a teaching demo that I made. So I have three broad categories in which I categorize my 3D printing. Mm-hmm. I've got the sort of lab, like duct tape version of mm-hmm. like, let's replace duct tape with something a little bit more sophisticated. I've got my experimental stuff that I just showed you, like we designed sponges and cat tongues and things like that to actually perform experiments on. And then the last sort of category that I use a lot of 3D printing for is to design in-class demonstrations to help give my students some experience and anchor some of the concepts that we talk about in something that they can experience and feel for themselves. And so this is a... I need a good name for this. So if anybody has a good name, throw it in the chat. My working name is Articulator. But so basically, one of the classes I teach is a comparative anatomy. And one of the fun things that we talk about is the different functional implications of different limb architectures. And, you know, we get into things like moment arms and how much force is required to move a limb of this proportion. And of course, it depends on where the muscle is coming from and where it's inserting on the bone. And so I designed this simple classroom demo. Is it basically, you can see it's got a little swivel there. So I've got these things are sliders, and they've got little pulleys inside of them, a little pin through. This is just like pull cord shade. And what we can do, and then you've got very simple limb here, a wooden dowel on a hinge, and it's got a little slider down here too. So what I can do is I can change my students, and I can change both one last thing I got to tell you, the muscles themselves are sort of stand-ins for, I'm sorry, the strings are stand-ins for muscles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the way I have this redirected is you can tug on this to pull the limb back and forth. And you can do it on both sides, of course, to get that limb going back and forth. So this might be, for example, a leg bone of an animal, right? And then we can play with the position of the origin of the muscle. In other words, the angle that it makes relative to the bone and the insertion of the muscle where it actually connects to the bone. We can slide this up and down as well. It's on a little slider. And you can literally feel the effects of that change on the force required to move the limb. And the one thing that my students start to appreciate is there's a trade-off, right? There's a force velocity trade-off. So you can arrange the musculoskeletal architecture in a way that you get it, you know, it requires very little force, relatively little force to move the limb. But for that arrangement, you have to have much greater motion of the muscle to get that. So there's a really interesting trade-off there. And then we sort of anchor that in a discussion of looking at animals, legged animals, and say, you know, how is a horse leg designed? Where are the muscles coming from and attaching to? And what are they designed for? Like, what have they evolved to be good at? And it's running, right? And then you look at something like a burrowing animal, like a badger, and they just have this musculoskeletal architecture that really maximizes force, but at the expense of velocity. Mm-hmm. And then we can do even cooler things. I'll show you this really quickly. Let's share my screen one more time.
That looked like a kneecap, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So, yep. So this is a kneecap. So you can actually make articulations on your limb. And so in this one, I've added a knee joint here. And I'll play this for you. One of the things I've done is one of the things we talk about is like, what's the role of a patella? And it has a really cool functional role. It actually sends the muscle further out so it can attach to the lower limb, the lower bone at sort of a more favorable angle to get to reduce the force required to move the limb. And so here's me flexing that knee joint. I've got a close up here. It zooms in. And so that's what a sliding patella does. And what's really cool about this is you can feel like we can slip that patella out and do it without a patella and then slip the patella in. And just that tiny little addition really changes the leverage of the system in a way that dramatically reduces the force required to move your lower leg. And I should add, by the way, right now, I'm sort of a hack when it comes to 3D. Like, none of this stuff is super sophisticated. I follow some 3D printed gurus on Twitter, and I'm totally blown away by what you all can do. My stuff is more functional. But this particular knee joint, it's a little bit troublesome. It kind of binds a little bit as I do it. I mean, this was a clean demo of it, but I'll just throw that out there. If anybody wants to take a stab at refining this design, I'd be happy to share these files with you, and we can make a 2.0 version of the articulator.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was even thinking beyond just the refining of the designs, like this entire rig, you know, while great, you know, obviously for this comparative anatomy, you know, biology, you know, also seems like it would work just as well for a mechanical engineering class of someone who's trying to understand, you know, different forces and how those can be applied, you know, a physics demo as well. You know, it really feels like there's a lot of different classrooms that rig could be dropped into and totally fit perfectly into a lesson plan.
Yeah, I think so. And you could even do, I mean, right now it's set up for just sort of giving the students an opportunity to feel the differences with their hands, which you really can do. You could even attach force sensors to the end of those strings and actually get specific measure loads as you change limb design and things. Right. Yeah,
definitely. Very, very cool. Yeah. So, this has been great. I'm trying to see if I have anything.
Any more questions?
Haven't really covered.
I see some suggestions for the thing bone shaker, and we have Edward's scissor hands, which that one is pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that is super cool. Thanks.
Thanks.
Well, yeah, we really appreciate the demos. Like I said earlier before we started, so I think we're going to keep you around to see if anybody has any questions
totally.
You know, towards the end here, but let's move on real quick to we'll we'll have you hang out with us. Well, we move on to our second to last segment, which is our Prusa Live contest winners.
Oh yeah, so, I'm gonna pull it up.
Yeah. So every show, we challenge you guys to show us the cool things that you are printing, and tag it on Twitter with Pound Prusa Live for a chance to win some filament. So who all do we have this week? Who's our number three there, Mickey?
So our number three is Martin Walker with his rose print. Oh my God, still loading. It's so slow. Come on. It's the one of the submissions in the...
Mickey's having some Wi-Fi troubles today, so yeah.
And it was in the Valentine's Flesh Contest.
Yeah.
We had a really so many prints of this model, but yeah, Martin just lit it up really nicely, so really appreciate it.
The light up version came out really pretty.
So congrats, Martin. You win the third place.
Yeah, that is a vase mode print, which is, you know, super nifty.
Yes. Yeah. That was really actually quite funny. My colleague here was trying to print, and she was like staring at it like, it's you know, it's full. Like, what do I do with this? And then she turned on the vase mode, and you know, suddenly the whole inside of the model disappeared. And yeah, it's really fun to see kind of complex shapes that are supposed to be printed in vase mode without the vase mode turned on. It doesn't make really sense. Okay, moving on to the second place.
Second place.
We have Bob, who submitted quite often, right? Bob Carnes.
Yeah.
And we have his orc prints. Come on, you can do it, internet. Yeah, so it's Gul'dan. It's modeled by Photosmint. And yeah, it's an MMU print that turned out pretty nice.
Yeah. Little pixelated force arrow, that's better.
Yeah, it's gonna get better. 71 hours, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, crazy print. Great job, Bob.
So that's our second place. And moving on to our first place. It's Chief with a really fun Chibi Leonardo Ninja Turtles.
Yes, these were adorable.
Yeah, these are great. These look almost like you know, bought from a shop from miniatures.
Absolutely. Chief, let us know, were these MMU prints, or was this a put together? It looks more to me like it was snapped together different parts.
Yeah, maybe. Like a little seam right here. But maybe it's a little bit of both.
His mouth just does not look like an MMU print to me, but I may be wrong.
It is perfect.
It's like, really clean.
Yeah, it's super clean. So yeah.
Yeah.
Great work, Chief. Congrats on winning.
Yeah. Fantastic job. All right. So we should have plenty of time for questions.
Yes, if you have any questions for Andrew, just throw them in between our normal questions. I've said it before with some of our previous, with Paul especially, our other guest professor, but I had some awesome professors during my study, but I really wish, you know, I had professors like you who just, you know, incorporate you know, new technology. And I assume you can't really buy any of the... Like, you can't buy a kit for the stuff you make, right? Like,
yeah, it
doesn't
right.
even exist.
Yeah, I mean, that's the motivation. And that's true for not only the demos that I use, but also, like I mentioned, the custom brackets that, you know, a lot of the tools that I use for my biomechanics research. And my own research is primarily focused on exploring insect flight. So we splint the wings of live bumblebees and wasps, and we challenge them to fly. And, you know, a lot of the setup, experimental setups that we need to build to do this aren't, you just can't get it off the shelf, right? So you have to build, mm-hmm. it. And oftentimes that construction requires connectors and brackets and things that it's just so nice to have a 3D printer to crank those things off on.
We do have like a program for schools, but we are piloting it here in Czech Republic. So I really hope, we can eventually expand it, you know, worldwide. And yeah, like makers like you would be, you know, it would be great to connect you guys, because I'm sure there are like tons of more, you know, awesome guys in universities and schools making these, you know, projects, and it's just sitting in their drawer. And if we could, you know, make them shareable between everyone, it would be really nice. And people could chime in and fix some issues that, you know, maybe you don't have the time to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings up a really great point. I've loved having you on. I've loved having Paul on. If any of you guys out there who are watching know any, you know, university, college, you know, even high school teachers who are doing amazing things with 3D printing, please let me know, because I would love to have more educators on the show showing off what they're working on, because I don't know. I think it's super great and super useful content.
Yeah. So,
and hopefully other educators will see some of this and, you know, get their minds working as to, you know, what might be possible.
Yeah, that'd be great.
The way the program works here is we basically loan the printer to the school, and if they make a project within 3 months and share it with other schools, they can keep the printer for free. And we are seeing, like, everyone is super, super, like, motivated to, you know, you have the price of the free printer, but I'm sure it's, like, just, like, the last bit of motivation. But we are seeing this awesome, you know, models of everything from basic stuff like divisions, right? Like you have a circle and it's split in halves and then thirds and quarters, to all the way to super complex, you know, chemical structures and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
It's really, really, I think 3D printers in education are just, you know, it's the first steps of what we can do with them.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say, like, in the comparative anatomy courses that I teach, traditionally, these courses rely on cast models or real models of bones as sort of teaching demos. The fact that we can now just 3D print them, just the cast models are incredibly expensive, and real bones, like back in the day, they actually used to use real skeletons to bring in the, and those are just like astronomically expensive. So it really just makes the teaching of this material much more accessible.
Yeah.
Piotr is asking if you thought about different patella types. There's Weiberg patella scale. It would be interesting to check the forces on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. We, so far, I've only used this particular model for just as a classroom demo. So we haven't really used it as sort of a experimental test platform to actually ask questions in the same way that we were doing with the cat tongues. But I could absolutely see down the road that it's sort of set up, it's primed to ask those questions. So that may be a direction we go in. Yeah.
Okay. We do have Chief in the chat. And that kind of answers our question of how this model was printed. So it is both. It is exactly both. So kind of MMU and then connected together once it's all printed.
Nice.
That's a nice approach. I like it. Okay.
Always nice to ask questions and have the guys right in the chat.
Oh, yeah, that's really nice. Yeah, it works both ways. We try to answer and the chat tries to answer it as well.
Yeah.
Will there be a 32-bit board for Mark III? Yes, once we have the new printer in the series, I'm sure we always try to do upgrades when it makes sense. So there would definitely be an upgrade for the Mark III too.
Do we have any info on the MMU firmware that we had mentioned? I know that there's new MMU firmware. Is there any kind of timeline going on there that you know of, Nikki?
I definitely know it's one of the projects that's like rapidly being, you know, it's changing all the time. It's definitely developing. And unfortunately do not know like the timeline on that, like if there's a release date. But yeah, definitely not sitting somewhere. I see new MMU prints in the office all the time.
Yeah, actively being worked on, but you know,
yeah,
still some time to go.
As it usually is with the MMU, it's quite complex. So yeah everything takes.
Insomniac takes also asked if shop notifications for out of stock products are becoming available again. growing pains on the new eShop. You know, it's definitely in the list of things to happen. But just with the new eShop coming in, it's not there yet, but we'll have
it. It's pretty high up on the features that we want to do. It's so much better than the old one, but yes, we need to implement a lot of things. Are we planning paid models on, I assume, Tom Clay is asking most likely about Prusa printers, so people can support designers. Yes, we really hope we can do it this year. We're not really sure yet about, like, the form, if it's straight up market and you're selling, like, a specific model, or if it's going to be more like support the designer and he publishes, like, like premium models. So that's something we are, like, brainstorming right now to try to get it right the first time. But yeah, definitely hoping to do it. There's the renaming, then there's one more big feature, and then I think we will get to paid models. There are a few people in the chat, Andrew, who would, I think, like to help.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
You can, if anybody's free to reach out to me, I'm on Twitter, AMTCastle, and I think my handle was added to the announcement that you sent out. Or you can just email me, amountcat@baits.edu.
Are we doing events this year? Yes, it's awesome to be able to go back to shows. If you go to prusaprinters.org, there's a thing in the menu called events, and there's a filter on the left, and you can see the events that we are planning to attend. There are still some events where we would like to go, but we're not sure if we'll be able to.
Right.
So it's not, oh wow, deploying new features as we speak. Okay, I always know to pick the right moment to do this. Andrzej, the project lead, is probably just pushing.
Tell him not to deploy new features.
Yeah, not during the stream. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like once a day for 5 minutes, and yeah, I just hit that bit. But basically, it's there in the events. There are a few maker fairs. Oh, it's back. Okay, I can share it now.
Yeah, the most recent thing,
this thing in Dortmund. There's a few maker fairs, the Maker Faire Miami. Of course, we're gonna do Comic Con Prague. Actually, that might be really really fun. We might have a little surprise there. Maker fairs. That's really looking forward to that. Then we also have TCT 360.
I'm hoping I get to go to Calgary. I'm assuming that I would, but I've heard good things about Calgary.
And then, like I said,
one that I'm excited for down there is, again, talking to the educators out there, ISTE.
Oh yeah.
We're planning on being there, and it'll be our first time coming out to that show. So, super super looking forward to that. Maker Faire Prague. That reminds me what I wanted to talk to you about, Mickey. Maker Faire Prague is coming back and coming back with vengeance. And I know some of you are already booking your travel to come out to Maker Faire Prague. So I really hope I get to see you guys there. So,
Yeah. So if you want to check that out, it's just right here in the menu on Prusa Printers.
Yeah.
It's one of the features we edit later on.
Miami may just be me. We'll see. If you're in Southern Florida, I'm hoping to see you guys in early April. So, come out and let's hang out in Miami.
will there be a new factory tour video in the near future? Actually, it's starting to come up more often. So yes, most likely there are some updates. It's been a while since we did that video, so, and for a while now we couldn't let any YouTubers in the factory because, you know, COVID, and we try to keep any visits to absolute minimum. But yeah, I hope we will be able to do an update on that quite soon. I mean, quite soon is a little bit of a stretch. Soon. Why isn't Joe here? It's Joe's birthday. He's on a dinner with his significant other. I think we can give him the day off on his birthday, right?
Yeah. One day a year. I think that's acceptable.
Yeah.
Actually, what he was probably in the office earlier today. He just
He was
out of dinner right now.
Yeah,
so
he took the night off in his free time, basically. Yeah.
Phil M, I hope to see you there also. We shall see.
That's not a question, but just a praise for Andrew that it's great to see some enthusiastic educators as well as cool technology.
Thanks. Yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's any other in here.
If you've missed it, we have the Prusa Slicer cup and a funny t-shirt that you lift to read the keyboard shortcuts.
Coltron, any platter software features in Prusa Slicer? What do you mean by platter software?
Maybe when you do arrange how it splits the project into like several beds, if you could select the bed, it would be cool.
We were discussing that on the Friday call this past Friday.
Yeah. And yeah, surprisingly, people are not asking about the Excel that much, but a few questions about that. Joe is finishing his update article on the Excel. I kind of expected it to be already out, but then Joe went back at it, and he's adding some more information, so that will be out. I expected this Friday to come out, that Excel update article from Joe.
All right, one more question to wrap it up, and I will have all of us answer this. Raymond Elder wants to know, do you guys like bacon? Mickey, do you like bacon?
I like it, but I'm not a fanatic bacon lover, no.
Oh, okay. Andrew, are you a bacon eater?
Thumbs up on the bacon.
Yeah. I definitely enjoy bacon. So thank you guys. It's been a great show. We appreciate everyone for tuning in.
Thanks, Andrew, again. It was really nice to have you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Great to join you guys.
Andrew, it was great. I really appreciate you coming out. Thank you. And
great.
I'm sure we'll end up talking soon.
So. I'm sure we will.
Yes. Bye, everyone. All right, everyone. Have a great evening. Thank you very much. Stay safe, keep printing, and we will see you in a month.